It's a Friday, and that means it's a Ben Fred Friday on Scoops with Danny Mac. As always, we're presented by Henderson and Watercutty. Henderson and Watercutty, see what they offer no matter how big the offense. STLCriminalDefense.com. STLCriminalDefense.com, helping out folks in both Missouri and Illinois. And they've been with us since day number one. Check it out. Their website, easily navigated, STLCriminalDefense.com. Ben Fredrickson, as always, good morning to you. How are things going?
Doing well, Dan. Yeah, happy Friday. And big sports weekend here coming up for us. So I'm excited about that. And excited that we've got some sports to get into, man. It's good to have the Cardinals back going in St. Louis. Felt like we hadn't been to a Cardinals game in about a calendar year. So that was good to have them back at Busch. And obviously a massive, massive Blues game tonight as well.
Yeah, massive Blues game for sure as they face elimination. We'll talk about that in a moment. I want to start with baseball. I'll tell you what, you know, you look at Adam Wainwright, you look at Yadier Molina. I'll start with those two. I'm going to start with Waino. I thought, and I've said this multiple times, I thought that his start coming back from 17 days off against the White Sox is one of the more remarkable starts I've seen him make. And I know it won't go down in his career as one of the great ones. You know, he's closed out World Series. He's had complete games in postseason play. The moment of the strikeout of Beltran and Brandon Inge in the World Series. But to go five innings and to get the win to move past Bob Forrest was pretty good. And then I watched last night and I thought, man, oh man, he's 10 days away from his 39th birthday. That's awesome too. And I just marvel at these guys. And then Yadi comes up and first time up in 22 days, strokes a single right with the bases loaded, throws a guy out, gets another RBI late. They're to be commended for everything they've done. It's just, it truly is watching greatness with both these guys.
Pretty special game for both of those guys, and kind of vintage Wainwright, man, at least in when he's going well in recent years. There's some early trouble, you know, Twitter melts down. How could the Cardinals turn to him? How can they leave him in? He's really struggling against the Reds, and it's always been his bugaboo, and he just kind of puts his head down and grinds through it, and you look up and it's, oh, he's doing pretty good. And he really found, I think, a better delivery over the course of the game. And he talked about that afterwards. He felt like he was doing a better job getting on top of the ball. And he has clearly Mike Schilt's trust that he's going to let him work through some stuff. And it was pretty clear once he did that and he started to cruise. But beyond that, you know, just his ability to bounce back after some early turbulence, that what he did for this pitching staff by being able to stick with it and see it through the other side of that start, that's huge. I mean, those guys had so many games and so few days to be able to kind of reset the rotation to give the bullpen more of a breather. I mean, that start that Adam had against the Reds was bigger than one game. It really gave some energy and some life to a pitching staff that was exhausted and also still trying to balance kind of how to handle, you know, this workload with guys have had so much time off here lately. So I thought it was just an ultimate veteran performance by Adam. And, you know, he looks like he's in mid-season form. And it's really impressive that he's doing that because you can see why he could have rust. Some of these guys do. Some of these guys are being handled very differently upon the return compared to like a young Jack Flaherty. Their ability to give Adam the ball and say, hey, go get it done, and we're going to trust you here. And once again, you see, you know, you would have the numbers better than I would, but however many times the Cardinals have won a game where he starts. I'm not talking about Adam Wainwright wins. I'm talking about the time the Cardinals win a game that Adam Wainwright starts. I get it's not the most perfect stat, but at some point you have to acknowledge it. And the proof is there. They tend to come out on the right side of games when this guy starts. And he's had it happen twice now in very key situations for this team in this very odd season. He's been reliable. And what other way to describe Molina, man? I mean, you mentioned the big plays, just the at-bat, you know, that cuts the lead to one. That, you know, looks like he's been doing it all season. And he hadn't swung in a meaningful setting in 3 weeks. He, on top of throwing out Galvis, he backs up first base on that play that could have been a disaster, a rare Paul Goldschmidt throwing error. I mean, would anybody have blamed Yadier Molina if he didn't back up Paul Goldschmidt at first base anymore, those throws? But Goldschmidt hardly ever puts a throw anywhere but right in the pitcher's glove. But there's Yadi ready to keep one mistake from becoming two on the backup. He pulls a ball out of the dirt on a Galvis strikeout, you know, a low Adam Wainwright curveball and throws out the strikeout at first base when, you know, maybe if it gets through another catcher, then that runs on. I mean, all kinds of little things that we you know, too often overlook for a guy who's 38 years old. And to me, that was the story of last night. It was really taking a moment to, okay, no matter where this season goes, no matter what it looks like, the Cardinals have a chance here. I mean, they're proving to themselves that their goals that they had before the COVID shutdown are still within their reach in a 16-team playoff. And they're stacking up so far pretty good against the teams in the Central. But last night to me was about, hey, Yadier Molina's future is uncertain. I don't think he'll play for another team, but we just don't know. And this season has taught us, you know, you just don't know about what's going to happen a year from now, let alone tomorrow. So enjoy Yadier Molina while you can watch him play in a Cardinals uniform, because you just never know when it's going to be the end. And when he's playing like this, it's just remarkable. I mean, the guy's automatic, Dan, with runners in scoring position. You go back to 2016, and the bat has always kind of been the bugaboo of his career. Since 2016, when he turned, you know, 33, he's got more RBIs with runners in scoring position than any other catcher, and it's not even close. He's got like 20 more than anybody else. He's hitting above 300. For a guy who's they say is bad, is supposed to be what keeps him out of the Hall of Fame, that's pretty good.
Wow. Yeah, that's an amazing stat. I think as a team, let's give them credit here too. If you're just looking at getting into postseason play, while it's very, very early, but they're hovering around the 500 mark, and now they're getting the reinforcements back, and they were able to get away from Sonny Gray and pick up a win against a pretty good closer in Raisel Iglesias. You know, they're withstanding some blows here and standing. You know what I mean? It's kind of like body blow. You're not getting knocked down, and you're delivering some blows. You know what I mean? And they're hanging in there. That's the thing I'm noticing, too, about this club. So wait until they get they've had the reinforcements. They're hanging in there. That's the other thing I'm noticing about this team. They're not 100%, but yet they're hanging in there. And that's something that's got to be talked about, too, with what's going on with the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to the manager. It's a testament to the leaders on this team. You know, and I've said this before, even going back to, you know, when Mike Matheny was the manager, I mean, it goes back to Tony La Russa. It's play a hard nine. And that's been something that this team has done a great job of, no matter the circumstances. The Cardinals are not a team that's going to say, well, you know, we lost two plus weeks due to COVID, so we're just going to punt on the season. It might influence the moves they make. It might influence the amount of innings a guy pitches or how certain guys are handled. And of course, the schedule moving forward is going to dictate a lot of people play just based on the amount of games and the amount of days. But what doesn't change for this team is the approach. You know, there's no empty game. There's no empty inning. I mean, how easy would it have been for the Cardinals to go, okay, you know, we're back in town. We faced a good pitcher. This one got away from us and kind of shut it down last night. No, they scratch, claw, fight their way back for a walk-off, one of the weirdest walk-offs you'll ever see. And they do it in part by Yadier Molina running out an infield single in the ninth inning. I mean, they're just scrappy. And you know, that word gets used with the Cardinals a lot, but how can you not use it when it shows up in a way like this? So I think as they continue to do this, they're going to face two things. They're going to hit a wall at some point, I think, just based off of the sheer amount of games. But one thing that can help them, you know, achieve what we thought might be impossible will be the standings. And when they see, hey, we're not out of this, and hey, you know, we can, our dream of contending is still within our reach despite this big setback that we had. If they can continue to stay healthy, virus related wise and also injury wise, that's the other big unknown right now.
Sure.
And they're gonna be encouraged by their performance, and that feeds into itself. So I think that's a great thing to point out. I think that's exactly what Schilt wanted to mention after the game last night. He's impressed with his guys. He's proud of them, and I can see why.
As always, brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, STL Criminal Defense. No matter the offense, how big or small, STLCriminalDefense.com. Ben Fredrickson is our guest. A couple other things that I want to get into. I'm not sure that there is a starting five with the Cardinals, and because of all the doubleheaders looming in September, I'm not sure you look at it as a starting five. I think you keep some of these guys stretched out, like an Oviedo, maybe a Gomber. So you have your original starting five, and you keep those guys going on some type of pattern, but then you keep other guys just, hey, you piggyback them somewhere, somehow, in the midst of the five, and you say, well, this guy didn't go. So say Flaherty goes next time out, and he gives you four innings, right? He gives you maybe 60 pitches, and that next guy, say it's Gomber, is going to piggyback him. He's going to ride it out the next time a long way, or Oviedo, or whatever. But that's how you maybe deal with the pitching staff, Ben. I think that's maybe how you have to do it if you're Mike Shildt, because of the way that this thing plays out with all the doubleheaders you have coming up in September.
It makes sense. They're not going to call it something different than a five-man rotation, but again, it's one of those examples of look at what they do, not what they say. And you have these pitchers. The strength of the Cardinals is their pitching depth. And we've talked about this going back to the start of spring training. How do you weaponize the pitching depth? Well, one way to do it is to use a gauntlet of games to flex these pitchers that you have in your organization that other teams can only wish they had, that would be starting in other organizations. You know, getting Austin Gomber, Oviedo, Ponce, Alex Reyes, depending on how much he can go. I mean, he's looked very sharp. You've got these arms that can give you more than one inning if you ask it of them. And I think you're right. You pick the starter who their stuff lines up with and complements the most, and you have them ready to take as ever much as needed, depending on the game. I think, you know, I'm curious about Jack. I'd like to obviously see him be able to go deeper and pitch more. I understand the extreme caution they're using, because nothing that Jack Flaherty does, you know, right now is worth jeopardizing Jack Flaherty's future. But I hope that as he gets more of his routine back, we'll start seeing more Jack Flaherty-like results, and they'll be willing to take the guardrails off a little bit more. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Kim, is he going to go deep? He's had such a strange season. You look at, he was in the rotation, he was out of the rotation, he was the closer, now he's back. You know, I don't know that the innings are always going to be there for him. And I think you're right. You don't want the pressure on that original rotation to feel like they have to go out there and carry it. Now, Adam Wainwright's going to try to do that, and they trust him to try to do that, because they need innings from if they're going to do this with everybody, they need one guy at least who can go out there and give you seven innings if he's capable. And Adam is in a position, you know, experience-wise and arm-wise, and able to do that right now. But I'm with you on the others. You know, make it a mix, call it a five-man rotation, but have your B squad, or whatever you want to call it, ready to fill in the gaps. And that's a strength, because not a lot of teams are able to do that.
What have you thought of the short time that we've seen of Dylan Carlson? What have you thought of him?
Well, I mean, you want to see better results, but I actually, you know, I think the at-bats are more optimistic than the numbers right now. He's putting good swings on balls. The exit velocity's there, and he's just hitting them. He's finding a lot of gloves. You know, I tried to say early on that, you know, everybody wanted to see him, and I think he's going to be a really good player for the Cardinals. But if people are expecting his promotion to be the answer to the offense, then they were probably going to be disappointed, and that has nothing to do with Dylan Carlson. You know, he looks comfortable to me. He looks like he's taken mature at-bats. It's fascinating to me, and I know you mentioned this on the broadcast last night, that he's seen so much off-speed stuff so early. I think it's a sign of pitchers, you know, understanding that he's not necessarily a rookie that should be taken lightly. It's also a sign of how pitchers in general are treating the Cardinals. We're seeing them get pounded with off-speed stuff because the word is out. The Cardinals jump fastballs, and some of them really struggle with with off speed. So that's going to be something that Dylan Carlson has to adjust to. Tommy Edman, same thing. He's seen him earlier. He's seen the off speed stuff earlier and earlier in counts because they know he can hit a fastball over the wall or to the wall and get a triple out of it. So I think we're seeing him being thrown the deep end of what it's like to be in the majors, and we're watching him adjust. I'm more encouraged with his at bats than the numbers. I know some people want him to hit a home run every time he gets into the box, but just have some patience, folks, and I think you're going to be really pleased with what this guy turns out to be.
These are Ben Fred Fridays, every Friday on Scoops with Danny Mac, is always presented by Henderson and Watercutty. See what they offer at stlcriminaldefense.com, no matter how big or small the offense. Ben, I want to get you on the Blues, a little college football before we say goodbye. Blues facing elimination. They were up three to one in terms of a two-goal lead the other day. Couldn't hold it. What happens here in game number six? What's your expectations going here into game number six?
Well, I think that the bulk of the discussion is going to revolve around who Craig Berube picks to be his goalie. And I get it. And I don't know that that's going to be the ultimate deciding factor, because if the Blues play like they did last time out, where they, you know, there were quotes from the Zoom afterwards about them falling asleep after they got that lead, then it won't matter who's back there. They've got to play a consistent game. They put together a great start, but they've got to see it through. I mean, the Canucks are a young team, but they're a confident team. They've won an elimination series. They're not going to roll over, and the Blues have backed themselves into a spot now where they can't help but play their best game for the entire course of the game, or else they'll be headed home here. They've hit some adversity. You know, Vladimir Tarasenko won't be available for this series. I'd be surprised if he's back at all this postseason. There's pretty significant concern about the re-injury of that shoulder. So they're up against it a little bit. If I'm Berube, I'm going with Jordan Binnington, man. I would just rather go down if I'm going to go down with the guy who has never lost an elimination playoff game for me. I think Jake Allen did a good job stepping in there, but I'm going to go back to Jordan Binnington, who has a fresh chip on his shoulder after not being able to get it done earlier in this series, and I'm going to bank on his ability to maybe steal me two games because we've seen him do it before. So that would be my Hail Mary. But I think it's important to point out that if there's not better play in front of the goalie, then it won't matter who's back there.
It's been crazy. You know, what have you thought of the games? I thought the games have been entertaining. I know there's no crowd, but yet it does feel like playoff hockey. I think the NHL as a whole has done such a great job with the bubble in general, too, not just with the Blues and Canucks. But I have been entertained with the NHL playoff format.
I'm with you, and I think the actual play is much more appealing than the lack of the atmosphere. It, you know, I kind of agreed. It's such a weird thing to this Tuukka Rask situation in Boston. You know, the goalie opts out, and he says a day after saying it doesn't feel like the playoffs. And watching the games on TV, you can understand why he felt that way. But then when you see, you know, you see the quality of the hockey, it looks good. I mean, it's not a bunch of guys out there looking winded or standing around. I think we saw maybe a little bit more of that in the round robin, but this does feel like legitimate, you know, high quality hockey, and that's the best thing. Now, I wish they could have done a little more with the presentation. I think hockey game so far have been the least impressive product on TV in terms of just the way it's being broadcasted. Just and nothing about the, you know, the broadcast here in St. Louis or other Bingham. I'm just talking about the shots that you see that are available to take. I think they're a little more bland than what you're seeing, of course, in like the NBA, than even what you're seeing in baseball with some of the cardboard cutouts. And I know NHL is trying to do a good job of getting some different things in there, but just those tarps over the seats to me is almost like I have to get past it, and I have to get past it and really focus on what's on the game. And if you can do that, then the quality of the hockey is good. I think that the start times have been shafting the Blues fans. I wish that would be better. You would like to see the defending Stanley Cup champions get a little bit more grace in the start times. But part of that's on the Blues for losing their one seed and falling all the way down during the round robin play too.
I'll wrap it up with this. We're seeing outbreaks of COVID-19 on college campuses. Mizzou moving forward, the SEC moving forward with the college football season. What do you think? The realistic approach of a college football season? Do you think we will see it?
I think they're certainly going to try. Yeah, I think it will start. Will it finish? I don't know. I've said from the beginning that I think if your college is having students gather on campus for classes, activities, then you play, and rightfully so. I think if you have a college campus that is not having students gather on campus, or you're only online, if you're not allowing, you know, dorms to have get-togethers, or you're not allowing guys and gals to be in Greek houses, or, you know, you're not allowing the chess club to meet, whatever you want to call it, then I think you have a hard time probably justifying how you're going to have student athletes get together for practices and games. You know, the college model, Dan, is built on the student athletes are students first. They're students first. We're told that time and time again. So now, if there's not on-campus, you know, activity, I don't really know how college football is going to say, well, the only on-campus activity can be students getting together for practices and games. That's, you see the reach that's being made there. And now it's almost kind of become a talking point that, well, if there are no students gathering on campus, then maybe it protects the athletes that much more. Which, I mean, you got to really, really roll it over in your head a lot of times before you start making sense of that. Either they're regular students or they're not. And the college model tells us that they're regular students. So I think anything that drastically treats them differently than regular students is going to be hard to justify. But we're going to see it. Try to be explained. We've already seen North Carolina is just one of the ACC schools that is now going to online-only classes. But they're saying, hey, we're having football this fall. So I get it. You know, they want to make that money. And they also, it's not just that. It's the fact that these models are built upon the revenue that comes in from college football. If you don't have a college football season, or if you try to push it to spring and then you can't get it done in spring, people are going to lose jobs. Kids are going to lose scholarships. Sports that are not college football are going to suffer. So the model is built on getting this thing done. And I think we're going to see it push and push. And if there's not an interference from, you know, political leaders, from state and national guidance, whether that's the NCAA or the conference, then I absolutely think we will see some teams start. Now, where it finishes, I think will depend on how the virus is managed.
Ben, you're the best. We'll catch you up next Friday. Thanks, my man.
Sounds good, man. Have a good weekend. Hey, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Are you going to get Bauer on one of these broadcasts this weekend or what?
I'm going to try. I really am.
Get it done, man.
I love what he did. The free Joe Kelly, those spikes, I'm going to try to put in a my own bidding for that. I don't know if they've already been auctioned off, but that put it over the top for me. I'm in. I don't agree with everything he does or says, but I what I appreciate about him is that he cares, that he loves the game. Apparently, he's a very good teammate, but I appreciate that. You know, he's trying to improve the game. He's trying to engage with fans on social media. How do you argue with that? I don't.
I'm with you. I think he's a bit of a visionary between the way that he started his own media conglomerate,
absolutely,
and everything else. So I just want to hear him. Get him a headset. You know, it'll be socially distanced. You can have him down in the dugout. I just like to hear him pop on a call and talk baseball with you during one of these games.
Well, it was funny. I don't know if you knew this, but during the offseason, he had had some comments, and I chimed in. And
yeah.
So some other people said, hey, you got to get with Danny Mac. He's open-minded on a lot of things with baseball. And so we went back and forth, and he said, hey, great, let's get together, and we'll do a podcast. I said, great. I said, I don't necessarily agree with everything you're saying, but this isn't a gotcha kind of interview. This is more of like, let's have an open-minded conversation. He said, wonderful, let's do it. I'll see you the first series. I said, perfect. I think I gave him my number, and he goes, great, we'll get together. We'll podcast, and we'll have an open-minded conversation about where we need to go with broadcasting. I said, perfect. So we were going to do it, and we weren't able to get together. Obviously, the virus hit. So, no, I do. I really appreciate what he's trying to do. I mean that wholeheartedly. And the spikes that he had that we showed on the game – and I'd only see the free Joe Kelly part of it. And then when they showed the Joe Kelly face, I lost it. Did you see that part?
The pouty face, yeah.
It's awesome.
I mean, get him and Joe Kelly on a podcast together and just stand back and watch a rip. Here's my question. And then
it's hysterical.
I know we got to go, but But do you think, are you buying that Joe Kelly perhaps filmed that video of him breaking out his own window during the off season as kind of an early card to reach back for when he went after the Astros, saying, "Look, I showed you guys I have control issues."
Hadn't thought of that conspiracy theory. I like it, Ben.
All right, well, I'll look forward to Tuesdays with Trevor moving forward on this.
But then again, it is Joe Kelly, so it might have been real. Who knows? He's a beauty.
No doubt. All right, man. I'll see you this weekend.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Appreciate it.